Hello and welcome to The Herd Has Spoken, a podcast brought to you by Muskox Men's Apparel. Darby Hand, welcome to The Herd Has Spoken.
Oh, thank you, man. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're a lumberjack. Most people don't know lumberjack. So let's start out with probably the most quintessential lumberjack that jumps into people's mind, Paul Bunyan. What's like your favorite Paul Bunyan fable?
Oh, my favorite Paul Bunyan fable. Wow, that'd be a hard one. I do like to always imagine swinging through a tree with one swing. That would make my life a lot easier. So I sure would like to imagine doing that.
I like it. Yeah. Paul Bunyan doesn't chop down trees. Paul Bunyan takes down like five trees with one swing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd win a few competitions if I could do that.
Yeah. I can imagine. Well, yeah. See, you mentioned the competition. So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, what does it mean to be a lumberjack in 2021?
What I do is the sports side of it. We compete head to head in a couple various chopping events and sawing events, but we use traditional axes, traditional crosscut saws. We've modified them to this point where they cut a lot better than they ever have, but it's all still just the same. This is a piece of steel. And you're splitting some logs in half, making one log into two logs for the most part. And I also compete in climbing and stuff. So we do a 60-foot spar pole climb, where it's a race all the way to the top. You hit the top red line, and then it's a race actually back down to the bottom. And it's basically a free fall. All you have holding yourself up there are two linesman's gaffs and a hemp rope that you throw around the tree.
All right, let me interrupt you right there. So linesman's gaff. So can you explain what that is to us?
Yeah. So it's like what guys would use to climb up a telephone pole. It's just a spike that sticks straight out the side of your heel. And we kind of just modify those a little bit better so we can move a little faster. We turn them in and then they can roll out of the tree. And we actually take the whole top pad and we take a fiberglass and mold it to our leg. So then it's just a little more customized to our fit, but yeah, it's just a traditional linesman's gaff that we've made to race.
Very cool. So there's a number of events, right? So if I'm following you, you got chopping, you've got sawing, and then you've got climbing, right? So those are the three buckets of events that are part of the Lumberjack Championships.
Yeah, and it actually keeps going. I've competed for quite a while throughout my life, and I started the whole timber sports when I was about four, and I was doing log rolling, and that's just a log in the water and two guys get on it and the last one on the log wins. But yeah, when I was a really tiny little guy, I started doing that, and where I actually grew up in Hayward, Wisconsin, that's where it's the hometown of the World Lumberjack Championships. So I was always watching every year, seeing all the other competitors chopping and sawing and all that crazy stuff. And I was like, you know what? I think I want to do that someday. So,
yeah, what a unique place to grow up, Hayward, Wisconsin. I mean, to be at the pinnacle of world events for being a lumberjack and timber sports. I mean, that's a pretty fantastic, you know, fortuitous bounce in terms of where you were born. What was your first memory in terms of timber sports as a youngster?
It'd probably be log rolling, finally log rolling in the world championships, that, and then the first time I ever climbed, actually when I was about 14, helped build the show here in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee with. He taught me how to climb when I was about 14. It was after the whole weekend of the championships got done. I just kind of went over to him and I was like, hey, mind if I try that out? And He got me like 30 feet up the pole, and then I had to come down. And I looked down, I took about one step, and I fell all the way down from 30 feet. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this.
Well, it sounds like going down is actually a lot harder than going up, because you could get, you know, if you have a spike and it gets caught in the wood, like that's not good for your knees, your joints as well when you're trying to go down. So you're trying to go down as fast as possible, but you've got these spikes on you. So is that the hardest part of you know, climbing poles?
It's probably the most dangerous part. I think going up is the hardest just because it's the most strenuous on your body. But the coming down, I definitely know a few guys who have snapped their legs in half, broken. There's one guy who broke both of his ankles at the same time. It's a pretty dangerous event throughout the whole thing. I've gaffed myself actually instead of the tree on the way down before, so that wasn't very fun. But
well, going back to when you were 14 and you fell 30 feet from the top of the pole, did you come out unscathed, or what was the story when you fell 30 feet?
Oh, I had splinters all over my arms and had some splinters on my knees and stuff. But, you know, if you're going to be part of this sport, you got to be ready for splinters and you got to be ready for cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, you probably have 100 splinters in you at any point in time, given that you're spending all your day around wood, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's any ever a time where I don't have one or two big splinters on me.
Okay, so I want to go back here. So you're age four, and you see this first log rolling competition. Next thing you know, you're jumping in the lake or the river and get an opportunity to do log rolling on your own. And then next thing you know, you're now the 2021 U.S. rookie champion for steel timber sports. So, you know, what happened in between? I mean, you're in this really unique spot where it is the timber sports world championship in Hayward, but you know, how do you get trained on this? How does one make the choice to actually go forward to be a lumberjack that's competing professionally?
I just really had the desire from a young age. Even remember there's a little drawing I made going into, I think it was fourth grade. And we had to write down what we wanted to learn that year and draw a picture of it. And I wrote, I want to learn how to saw a piece of wood. And I drew a picture of me sawing a piece of wood. So that had nothing to do with school, but it just kind of shows you how I've personally always wanted to be in this sport. And I've always had a desire to be good at it. But yeah, and then when I was 15, I got an opportunity to do lumberjack shows up in Hayward. And once I was doing lumberjack shows, it's all just easy from there. I mean, it was.
Now, did you know what you were doing? Did you know what you were doing at age 15? Right. So you'd started log rolling at four, and then now you're at 15, got invited to do lumberjack shows. Did you come in knowing the basics of chopping and sawing and climbing at that point?
No, I didn't know anything. I did know how to kind of swing an axe. I've been splitting wood for my whole life. I grew up in Wisconsin, so we were always burning wood for heat in our house. But so I knew how to swing an axe kind of, but I had no idea of really anything else. The very first day, the first thing they did was strap me on the pole, and they said, okay, we're going to teach you how to climb. And then right after that, it was, okay, now you're going to learn how to chop. And you just kind of got thrown into it. And it's really just, it clicks or it doesn't. And it just doesn't work out for you. But yeah.
So Darby, were you with like a starting class that did this? Were you with a group? I'm sort of envisioning like, you know, the Navy SEALs training where there's, you know, 30 guys and, you know, I don't know the exact percentages, but 80-90% of them are going to tap out. Like, did you start with a group and some of it clicked for some and not for others, or how did it work?
No, it was just me and one other guy my first year that were just starting that year. We were actually both 15 years old, so it was kind of fun to, we were kind of going head to head in our own races, you know, like, well, I'm getting better at this event faster than he was. He was a better climber and I was a better chopper. So we had some fun going back and forth with that. But yeah, I've only known a couple of people who didn't really work out in the sport, because the community in the sport is so good that everybody's willing to teach anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Really, everybody just wants the sport to grow, and the only way you can grow a sport is by having more people involved. So yeah.
Well, and it's a unique sport too, because it's not one event, right? And it's kind of like the decathlon in some ways, right? Because there are so many different events. So, you know, how does that work, right? Like, to be the best. So you mentioned like you happen to be better at chopping, right? So is your goal to like be the best chopper and to win an individual, you know, event, or is your job to be the best overall, you know, lumberjack or timber sports professional who's going to win the whole event? I mean, how does that work?
Well, when it comes to like the Steel Series, which I won just this year, you want to be the overall lumberjack. Yeah. So like for my training regimen, every morning I'd get up and I'd go over to the training area, and for about 2 hours, you run through every event at least once. And if I didn't do that in the morning, I was trying to do that at night. You got to just do each event at least once a day. And then I was going to the show and running half of the events there every day. So you really want to be overall. Everybody can just focus on one event. I know some guys don't like to saw, so they'll just focus on their chopping to try and gain points there, but then you're just making it harder on yourself in the other events.
So how many events are there in total in the Steel World Championships?
So for the rookie, we have the stock saw, the underhand, the standing block, the single buck, and the one board springboard. So there's five events there.
Okay. So total of five events. So you're getting out every morning. Let me make sure I'm following you. So you're going through each of these events. So you're chopping, you're sawing every morning, and then you go to work, right? And and you actually work where you're chopping and sawing wood at work. Tell us a little bit about what work is entails for you in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah, so I work over at Paula Deen's Lumberjack Feud in Pigeon Forge, and that every day we go in, we get the wood prepped, we press a bunch of wood, get it all lathe turned, so it's 10 inches, so we're all chopping the same size wood for the show. But then, yeah, you're doing about 2 to 4 chops every show, and we're doing around 2 to 3 shows every single day, and you're doing that 5 days a week. So in the summer months, you're working hard. They're about 12-hour days just at work. And then on top of that, trying to fit in some training, they become real long days, but trying to win, you got to do it.
Oh, absolutely. It takes what it takes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for you, how is training different than what you're doing at the shows, right? Because from a casual person's perspective, sort of it's all timber sport. So whether it's the show or training. So what's that differentiation between the two things?
It's a huge, huge difference, actually. I always say, you know, you can't train in a show because it's not worth it. In a show where we're just moving, and you can't stop in a show. You can't stop and look at your hit and say, did that go in the wood exactly how I wanted it? Was it exactly where I wanted it? If you mess up, you just have to keep on moving. And then by the time you're done with the log, or by the time you're done with an event, you have to think back on that and try and fix it after the fact. And that just doesn't really work. Yeah, you got to be able to go about 60-70% and just place everything exactly where you want, because so much of this sport has to do with precision and just axe placement. Believe it or not, it's not all just be the biggest, strongest guy. It's usually quite the opposite. It's whoever's the most athletic overall, really. It's who can be the most precise, present that axe perfectly, and place each hit exactly where they want.
So what's your favorite event?
My favorite event would be the standing block chop.
So yeah. When you're doing a standing block chop, what's going through your mind? Right? What's the goal? What's the perfect placement? And maybe if you want to start, you just to explain to our listeners, what is the standing block chop before we get into the specifics?
Okay. So the standing block chop is just, you have a lathe turn log. It's usually about 10 to 12 inches and it's standing vertical right next to you. And it's basically simulating chopping down a tree. So you're just going to chop halfway through one side in the front and then you run around the block and chop halfway through the backside. And it's like I said, it's really just all about placing your hits right.
So where's the optimal place to hit? Like when you go up to that tree or to that log, you know, what does good look like?
So that's really, really hard to explain. I've just kind of learned what it feels like is the best way to put it. You need the right kind of angle, because if you're chopping straight in, then you're chopping straight against all the grain of the wood.
Right.
So imagine, like you're splitting a log and you're going with the grain, and you kind of have to find that happy medium where you're going with the grain. So you're still, your axe is free and it can move through the wood, but it's not against the grain. So then your axe wouldn't travel through the wood.
So you're chopping up, right? So you can see, so you're saying you don't want to be parallel to the ground because then you're going against the grain completely. Mm-hmm. So you want to embrace it a little bit. So for those listening, is it really kind of about a 45 degree angle plus or minus, but every piece of wood is different, right? That's the beauty. You kind of got to feel it out where the sweet spot is.
Yeah. Everybody will say about 45 degrees, but if you get a really soft log, you can add a little bit more slope and really bust through the log. And if you got a really hard log, you usually have to open a little wider. And it really just depends on whatever that piece of wood is presenting you with that day.
And for this, how many chops are you doing for the first half on average? It's going to depend on the density of the wood, right? Of course, but you know, mm-hmm. and how strong you are that day, right? but on average, about how many chops are you doing before you run around to the other side of the tree?
So like in the steel series, I'm usually shooting for 8, and I usually stick with my plan for 8. I've practiced that pattern. It's just one up, one down, and then you have your whole area you can aim at. You do 2 more up, 2 more down, that whole chip is gone out of your way. And then you can set your drivers, which should penetrate to at least halfway so that you can go chop on the backside. But yeah, practicing one pattern over and over again has helped a lot, because then as I run to the backside, just looking at the wood and how far that axe has traveled, I know close to about what I should be putting in the back. So I know how to adjust as I'm running around the log.
And so when you're opening up the log initially with sort of the up and the down, at that point, are you getting a read? Like, it's probably not a conscious thought, but are you getting a chance to feel the wood at that point to be able to know how you need to make micro adjustments to what you're doing with, you know, strokes 3 through 8?
Yeah, the very first two hits are probably the most important hits. If you miss one a little bit, you know, you got to adjust. And if you know that, yeah, you can really just feel how good the wood is going to be. You can tell if it's going to be stringy, you can tell if it's going to be hard. It really all comes down to those first two hits.
And like, do you have a favorite type of wood? Like, do you love really hard wood to be able to, like, cause it's like the most challenging and you don't need to think about it and it's just like your muscle? No.
No, softer the better, mostly. I love chopping white pine. That's what we chop in most competitions throughout the U.S. Red oak would be the best hardwood to chop, just because it moves very well, but it's still really hard. But then, yeah, you got like guys in Australia, all the way over there. Those are some of the best wood choppers in the world, but they chop all super, super hard wood. But yeah, I like to stick to the soft wood.
Fair enough. So how does the U.S. compare in timber sports to the rest of the world? I mean, is U.S. sort of like the country when it comes to timber sports, or are we sort of an average company? Like what's the dynamic in terms of the world competitive landscape?
I would consider us at least top four. I would say top four, top five. The top two are usually New Zealand and Australia. The sport has been over there. Wood chopping specifically has been over there for generations and generations. The guys over there are pretty much unbeatable at their own events. But overall, we're up there, especially with the sawing involved and all the other stuff. We've come a long way, the U.S.
So how important is sort of the infrastructure and support associated with U.S. timber sports? I mean, I know for Olympic sports, that's just such a critical piece. Like, hey, do we have the training, the facilities, the coaching, and ultimately like the dollars to be able to fund athletes to prepare? What is the dynamic like in timber sports?
It's definitely a lot harder, mostly because you got the wood procurement. You gotta get your wood somewhere. Timber prices are rising right now, and yeah, it's getting a lot harder to find good training wood because everybody just wants to bring it straight to a sawmill and sell it. So that part of the whole sport has gotten a little more difficult. The equipment itself gets real expensive. But yeah, if you know the right people, and everybody is willing to help you, but if you know the right people, you can usually get your hands on some pretty good equipment. Actually, the guy that coaches me, his name is Matt Slingerland, and he let me use some of his best axes, basically $650 axes to swing in the steel series. And that played a huge part in me winning. And then we actually have collegiate series all over the U.S. So that really helps some guys that didn't get the opportunity like I did to grow up in Wisconsin and get to chop at 15. So those guys can come in and they get to figure out the sport, and they'll have a coach to teach them how to get through it. And yeah.
What does it mean to you, Darby, to be a lumberjack?
What does it mean to me? Just having a great time every day and working out, getting paid to work out, basically. Yeah, just having a good time. I mean, there's some days where it's hard. It's miserable chopping that wood out in 100 degree weather, but you still get done with the log, and you just have a feeling of satisfaction because you still got through it.
How has it changed you as a person, right? So that, one of the things I'm always so fascinated with this sport is because, you know, sports really in so many ways sort of a microcosm of life. So what has timber sports taught you, and how has it changed you?
I would say my work ethic has skyrocketed since I was 15, and learning the work ethic here doing timber sports, doing lumberjack sports, just in general. You have to work as hard as you can work to really succeed in any of it, and you have to give it your all every time. And it's not even just giving it your all, it's also listening to the people that are giving you advice. It's listening, taking in, absorbing everything that you can to better you in what you're doing. It really just learned that and been able to apply that all over life too. I'm actually going to school full time. So I was training, going to school full time and working full time. But the work ethic that this has taught me, it felt like nothing. I mean,
I love that story. I mean, honestly, this is probably one of the themes for those who, you know, continue to follow and listen to The Herd Has Spoken, is it really doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a pro athlete or you're a venture capitalist. One of the things that we continue to hear, it's like, hey, there's no substitute for hard work. There's no substitute for surrounding yourself with smart people and having the humility to listen to them and understand, and knowing that, hey, you're going to go through some tough times, right? You're going to get knocked down. You're going to fall off a 30-foot pole on the first day, but mm-hmm. you know, those are the moments that actually shape you. So long as you put in the time, energy, and effort, and you have the confidence and the fortitude in yourself to be able to respond, get up and keep moving. So I love hearing these stories, and Darby, I guess I'd love to hear a little bit as well about like what have been those challenging moments for you, because, you know, from the outside in, hey, you're going to be competing in the, 2021 US Rookie Champion, you know, World Championship for Steel Timber Sports. Like that seems amazing. But at the same time, like I have to imagine, like it hasn't always been a success only journey to date. So what are some of those moments of adversity that you've had to overcome in your timber sports career?
The biggest one I can think of would be the underhand chop. For my first 6 years of doing shows and everything, I did the underhand chop, but I never really had, like, I had some guys teach me the basics of swinging and, you know, hitting your lines and stuff like that, but I never really got any professional coaching on that event specifically. Well, on any event to that point. And then when I moved here to Pigeon Forge, I met Matt, and Matt and I started training together, and he basically had to reteach me how to chop it. After doing it for 6 years, I had to throw everything that I thought I knew out the window and relearn it how he wanted me to do it. And now I'm chopping hundreds of times better than I was back then. I actually think about the log, I think about every aspect of the chop, but that was super frustrating for me, because I would get halfway through a chop and I realize I'm doing the old bad habits again. And I got lucky with a couple of the events moving here, like the standing block, because I started out on a clean slate. I had never done the standing block when I moved here. So I've learned that in the last 3 years, but the underhand was definitely the most frustrating. Had to just take a step back. There were tons of times where I would just try to hit one hit over and over and over again, and it just wouldn't go as I liked it. And had to step off the log and let the frustrations cool down and get back up there and try it again, and just pay attention, make sure you fix the habits. And
it's interesting that, you know, like creating new habits you found to be actually pretty easy, but trying to, you know, recreate or create better habits than ones that you've developed in the past is really hard. What do you think made that so hard? I mean, was it like you weren't sure that the new method was best? Was it just muscle memory that you had to, you know, overcome? Like, what do you think made it so challenging for you with respect to the underhand chop?
I would say it was muscle memory. Before that, when I was living in Hayward, we would do two shows a day, and we were doing at least two underhand chops every show. Yeah, it was two underhand chops every show. And we were doing about 100 shows every summer. So to that point, I had just chopped hundreds of underhand chops. And to completely throw away all that muscle memory, everything felt awkward. I just felt like my hands shouldn't be where they were, you know, My arms felt weird. My legs felt weird. Everything just felt weird when I was first trying to change everything. When I was first trying to break all those bad habits. And it that even happens now. Like somebody will watch it and be like, hey, I think you're slightly off here. And just that slight adjustment feels like you move a whole foot. But really, if you watch a video, it almost looks the same. It's just an inch adjustment here or there. But
such a good lesson here too, right? I mean, with discomfort comes growth, right? So like you're surrounding yourself with the right people, but then you're doing something and man, it feels really uncomfortable, right? Like, ah, man, this just feels wrong. Like I'm not doing it. Almost feels like you're throwing a ball left-handed or something. You're like, ah, this does not feel right. Why can't I just put that ball in my right hand and let me at it? And it's hard, you know, when you get in those competitions, sometimes you start to go back to those old habits because it's like, it just feels right. And it's changes so hard, but obviously for you, it's working and you're on your way. For those listening, would love to hear kind of what's next for you, Darby. And obviously definitely encourage people to follow your journey on Instagram, darby.hand. Give Darby a check out Darby. And if you think he's worth a follow, by all means do so, but would love to hear kind of what's next. I understand you've got this, you know, your US rookie champion. So now you're going into the world championships. What should we expect from you here going forward?
Oh yeah. So in May here, I'll be representing the US in Sweden. Get to do the rookie world championships. So hopefully that goes well. I'd like to at least podium there. That's a pretty big goal of mine. But then after that, I'm going to have to start training and really working towards the pro series and try and make the semifinals and then the finals there. Just keep growing in the sport. You know, I want to do the sport for the rest of my life. And there are guys, they actually have masters events is what they call them. And I think it's like anybody over 60 years old can do the masters events. And I want to be out there doing it when I'm 60 years old and chopping away.
I love it. I love it. Well, listen, Darby, we appreciate you taking the time here to share all of your experiences. And I know we're going, you know, you've got the Muskox herd. It's going to be cheering you and following you again. You can follow Darby.hand on Instagram. But Darby, before I let you go, a couple of final questions here for you. So number one is, what is your biggest pet peeve when it comes to timber sports?
Probably the stereotype. The stereotype of lumberjacks. A lot of people just, you say lumberjack and they think just big dude with big beard. Well, I got a beard, I guess. That one doesn't work too well. But yeah, just a big, dumb, burly lumberjack who smacks away at a log. And that stereotype is just so wrong because there's so many people in the sport. I mean, it's just like any other sport. The guy that coaches me actually has his doctorate in physical therapy. I'm in forest management. So like think about ecology and like so many people are just so much smarter than just a big, dumb, burly lumberjack. We just beat away. And even during the event, it's not just beating away at the log. It's not just moving as fast as you can. Everything is so technical, so precise. You're thinking about it. It really is almost like a game of chess. You have to hit and react to whatever happens. And you have to do that reaction within under a second because your next hit is going to be coming in at about 1.2 seconds later. So that decision has to be so fast. Your brain has to be moving. So yeah, we're not just smacking away as fast and hard as we can. Decision.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. But important question though, is the beard a legit stereotype? Cause you know, hey, you've got a great beard and I want to know, you know, is there anyone who's going to be on that podium without a beard? I mean, that's the one stereotype that I'm having a hard time overcoming.
Yeah. No, there are. I know a few lumberjacks who can't grow a beard.
fair enough. I appreciate you being a good sport on that one. Finally, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best piece of advice that I ever received, I had to really think about this one. And I remembered a time where it was actually right after the World Championships. It was like a big lumberjack party. And I got to talk with a guy named Dale Beams. And he's from the Australia, New Zealand area. And he's one of the best standing block choppers to have ever actually competed. And I was just like, you know what, like, what's one piece of advice you can give me about the standing? And he said, beat the block, don't beat the clock. Because you're not, and what he meant by that was, you're not racing the time. You're not racing the best time. You're not racing the guy that's standing next to you. What you're racing is the log presented in front of you and yourself. Because if you don't chop that log to the best of your ability that you can chop that log, then it doesn't really matter. And if you did chop it to the best of your ability and you still didn't win, then that just means you need more training. It just means you got to put in more work on the side, because in the competition, it's really just to present what you've put together outside of the competition. And you just have to hope that that wins.
I love that. I mean, it's really said differently and like applied more broadly. It's focus on what you can control in this moment. Don't focus on the outcome, right? Like when it's you in the block, you can control that, right? Like I need to get through this block as soon as possible. You and the clock, like, hey, that's going to take care of itself. If you focus on doing things right in terms of the block and in life, I feel like there's so many lessons for that as well. It's like, yeah, don't worry about how much money you're going to make. Those sorts of things take care of itself. Like focus on doing a really good job, building a team, training, taking care of yourself, helping other people. And then the other stuff will take care of itself. So, you know, that feels like a little bit of a microcosm and probably a great note to end on here, Darby.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, we appreciate you being part of the Muskox herd. Again, check out Darby at darby.hand on Instagram. And until next time, I'm your host, Brad Hoos, with the Herd Has Spoken.